the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to a recess version of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, we're going to cover a topic that is very important to those of you who are nearing retirement or if you're just retired, and that is protecting your savings and investments from what we know is going to be the next downturn. For many baby boomers, their retirement plans have been delayed, they've been altered, or their lifestyles have been changed as a result of two major bear markets and the policy of financial repression, which has been pursued by the Federal Reserve, which has kept interest rates suppressed for the last 8 years. And even though, at least on a technical basis, the economy has recovered from the Great Recession, economic growth has been anemic, and investment returns have been very hard to come by these last 2 years now that the Fed has ended quantitative easing. When the Fed actually raised interest rates, the economy began to stumble again, and there is truly the risk of another recession ahead with an accompanying bear market. So in a world of zero interest rates, which is what it is for now, in some place it's negative interest rates, it's important that listeners begin to think about protecting their capital, especially now the returns on capital are this low. So today's program is going to be all about preserving capital. Jim, what we need to do before we talk about how to do it, let's frame everything, do the groundwork as to why investors really need to start thinking in defensive terms in the environment in which we find ourselves.
You know, this reminds me of, John, a great quote from sports that I think is appropriate as it pertains to, let's say, the markets right now. And that is, offense wins games, but defense wins championships. And if you think of this year's Super Bowl, where the Denver Broncos defense basically stomped the other side, and they end up winning the championship. And I think that is where investors need to be right now. And especially now that we're seeing the economy slow down, and the risk of another recession is increasing. It's really amazing when you think about it. It was November of 2014 when the last bit of taper ended. So the Fed was no longer providing liquidity to the markets, John. And since that period of time, the stock market has virtually gone nowhere. So it's rather interesting, even though the Fed is still talking about raising interest rates, they keep doing a number of 180s. And they've been doing that. I mean, they started in December. They were going to have 4 rate hikes. Then they had their March meeting, and they nailed that down to 2. And now, as a recent speech, it's implied that maybe they only go once this year. So apparently, the Fed is starting to see something, which we talk about on the weekend program, of an economy that has peaked. And there are a number of indicators that point to that direction. And so that has broad, broad implications for investment portfolios, and especially for somebody that is nearing retirement or maybe just recently retired.
Well, this is an issue we've been discussing on the weekend show about the risk of another recession and a bear market. So what we want to do is, right, so much for that. Let's put this in context of what that signifies for someone who is nearing retirement or for individuals or couples who actually did recently retire. They have to grapple with this, the environment we're in.
One of the biggest investment mistakes made in retirement portfolios is to be highly concentrated in equities, or what we would call risk assets, at the beginning of a retirement. And there's a reason for this. You don't want to be drawing down assets in a market downturn because you're going to be liquidating those assets at a time they're falling in value. So you diminish your assets at an accelerating rate. Now, the typical retirement plans usually come up with a withdrawal rate. In other words, if you have X amount of dollars and you're going to retire, they're going to say, all right, your distribution or drawdown rate is going to be X percent a year. That's the way most financial plans or retirement plans work. So it might be 3 or 4%. So most assets that people have are invested either in mutual funds or ETFs. So for example, if we take $1 million portfolio, and let's say you wanted to take a distribution rate of, let's say, 4% a year, technically, you could last for 25 years at that rate, not counting inflation. The problem is, what happens when those assets need to be liquidated? Now, it's not a problem in a bull market where stocks are rising. Where you run into problems, and it could be a disaster, is in a bear market when stocks fall 30 to 45%, as they did, for example, with the bursting of the tech bubble or the Great Recession between 2007 and 2009. Because what you're doing is you're liquidating assets that are declining in value, so you quickly deplete your portfolio. And that is why you should be more conservatively invested at the beginning of your retirement in order to avoid a major drawdown of your assets should we enter another bear market or a recession, which, John, at this point, I think is highly probable.
Yeah, as so, and we've discussed that on the Financial Sense News Hour quite a bit. Now, Jim, are there any guidelines or recommended percentages as to the amount that should be invested in stocks when you retire? And you remember, we've discussed a lot here on Lifetime Income, the idea that everybody had formula retirement plans. Retirement planners were using these formulas and everybody just got plugged into them. So I imagine that you're going to have to think a little differently.
Well, we're operating in a different environment. I mean, this was brought up by Professor Merton when I interviewed him, just about a month ago, when his new article on the coming crisis in retirement planning. And he really illustrated this, John, by talking about, had you retired in the year 2000, you had $1 million, you could count on getting $70,000 to $80,000 a year income off that $1 million, which is pretty comfortable for most people retired if you add in Social Security and other types of investments. But you fast forward today where the 10-year Treasury bond is 1.7%, $1 million only produces $17,000 of income. So you've seen over a 70% drop in the level of income. So there are a number of guidelines that are used in the industry, and they're sort of the norms when you talk about retiring, and they use them. One very popular norm is use your age to allocate a percentage of assets, for example, invested in fixed income or bonds. We tend to use a more targeted approach based on meeting budgetary needs. For example, pairing secure income to match basic budget expenses and more variable type returns to take care of what I call the bucket list or items in a budget like travel and entertainment. Because we find, John, that that works much better than trying to use, quote, a particular percentage, because percentages don't work in practice. It might have worked in another era of time, for example, in the 80s and 90s, when the returns on investments, whether fixed or in the market, were much more predictable, and the returns on fixed income and cash were much higher. I mean, even as far back as 2007, you could have got 5% on a money market fund. Today, you're lucky to get over 0.25%, if that at all. So, you know, things have changed dramatically here. And I think one of the problems that people have is you come up with these standard quotes or these standard percentages. John, they just simply don't work in this kind of environment. And that's why it's very, very important. They did a number of studies on retirement planning success. And what they found, contrary to popular opinion, is you should have less invested in the stock market at the beginning of your retirement and more invested in the stock market towards the end of your retirement. And the reason is you do not want to take a big hit to your retirement portfolio right at the beginning when you first start out. I mean, imagine if you had $1 million in 2008, by the time the bear market was over, stocks were down 45%. What you don't want to do is start out your retirement and take a 40 or 50% hit to your portfolio. And that's why we're talking now, John, it's time to think about getting defensive given the macro environment we're starting to see with a slowdown here in the United States, a slowdown overseas. You've got negative interest rates in Europe and Japan. The emerging markets are in trouble right now. And we also have, you know, stocks aren't as cheap as they were, let's say, 6-7 years ago. And we're also in an environment where the economy is a lot more leveraged, which is one reason I don't think the Fed is going to get anywhere near close to what it thinks it's going to be able to do in raising interest rates without collapsing the economy into another recession.
Well, as I mentioned before on the weekend show, we've talked a lot about the approaching recession and bear market. Now, let's create a case here where you have investors, they're close to retirement or even recently retired, about the same stage of life. if they don't want to find themselves depleting their assets, they've got to have a plan to deal with this.
You know, it's interesting because this week, the Wall Street Journal did an article thinking about a approaching bear market and recession. And it was really how much you should have invested in stocks as an investor. Now, obviously, we're in the seventh year of a bull market, but this bull market is getting rather old. What we know now is from just looking at evidence, corporate profits peaked in the summer of 2014, and the economy, in terms of economic growth rates, has also peaked. So we know that within probably the next year or so, could be longer, we could find ourselves in another recession. This was the issue addressed in the Wall Street Journal article, and it really wanted to get at how much should you be invested in stocks? And as the journal pointed out, the percentage in stocks depends on, number one, the size of the portfolio, number two, your age, and number three, how close you are to your retirement. Now, the range for investing in stocks, and it's a wide range, believe it or not, from 0 to 100%. With in-between percentages based on risk and age of 30, 50%. All those percentages, John, were based on obviously asset size, your age, and then, of course, your own risk tolerance. Some people may not be able to tolerate risk. Others are more prone to taking risk and feel comfortable with it. So it was rather interesting when you took a look at what they were trying to get at, is how different people with different assets and different age look at the markets much differently in terms of their risk profile and the amount that they should be investing in stocks.
If we have to delineate these percentages, what do they look like?
I mean, let's start as the journal did. They start with the very rich. Now, very wealthy investors have a luxury that other investors don't. They can turn to, for example, cash preservation approach earlier than their less affluent peers. They have the luxury to be able to afford to protect their assets they've accumulated during a downturn. So they don't have to take the risk. They can say, you know what? Things are looking uncertain in the markets. It looks like the economy is not doing well. I'm going to protect my assets. I have enough assets to live on. I don't have to worry about what kind of returns I'm going to get in order to meet my monthly expenses. So they don't have to take on the risk. They have enough to live on, which is really important. But what was interesting is it's not only the very rich who can afford to do this. Investors who have saved very carefully and are able to live frugally can also afford to limit their risk as well. But, you know, the whole purpose of the article, which is what we're trying to get at today, is we've had two major bear markets here in the last decade. And each of those bear markets saw stocks go down 45% more, depending on where you're invested. Like, for example, the NASDAQ was down 70% during the tech downturn. And that is not the kind of position you want to find yourself in after two bear markets, as we discussed, for example, in last week's case study, heading into the next downturn, especially if you're drawing down assets. In other words, you're liquidating shares on a, let's say, a monthly basis to get your check. In other words, you're not relying strictly on, let's say, interest and dividends, because it'd be pretty hard to get 4% today, although that's still possible if you're doing individual stocks and bonds. But most people have their money invested in mutual funds, and they draw down those assets on a monthly basis. Stock market going up, no problem. Stock market going down, as happened in 2007 and 2009, that means every single month you're liquidating shares to live on, but you're liquidating those shares at lower prices, which is one reason why I think, you know, John, we really need to start thinking about capital preservation.
Okay, what about others? People who are less fortunate, maybe they're close to retirement with very low risk tolerances.
You know, for those with low risk tolerances, according to the article, and are, let's say, closer to retirement, the percentage in stocks is roughly around 30% with the balance invested in cash and short-term bonds. Now, the closer you are to retirement, the lower the percentage should be in stocks. Now, for investors who are what I would call in the middle age group, let's say late 30s, 40s, that percentage is probably 50%, 50% in stocks, 50% in bonds. You're basically reducing your risk by creating this balance between stocks and bonds. Typically, in a market downturn, bonds do well. But you're not completely out of stocks because you still have time working on your side. For example, take a look at the market recoveries from 2002 to 2007, where the stock market was up several 100%. And likewise, when the market recovered after the downturn of 2008 and 2009, between 2009 and 2015, the stock market was up over several 100%. So great market returns. You don't want to miss out on the run-up when another bull market begins. So if you're middle-aged, you've got probably another 20, 25 years working for you before you retire. You can afford to have a higher percentage in the stock market.
All right. What about younger investors, say people in their 20s, the 30s? The percentage of stocks is closer to 100%. So how do they do in this type of an environment?
You know, this is where dollar cost averaging really works for a young person. I mean, you think of somebody starting out at age 25 and they work for a company. They have a 401k plan. Every single month, they put money into that 401k plan. Actually, you really want to have market downturns because, let's take, for example, the market downturn of 2007 to 2009. Now, in September of 2007, the stock market peaked and went down just about every single month until the market bottomed in March of 2009. Now, if you're a young person and every single month you're putting $100, let's say, into your 401k plan, and let's just give you a hypothetical example. Let's say you're investing in a S&P index fund and it's $10 a share. Okay, at the peak of the market, your share value is $10. Let's say a year later, the market's down 20%, and now those shares are selling for $8. Well, that $100 you're putting in on a monthly basis is buying a lot more shares at $8 or $7 or $6 than, let's say, you were when the stock market was going up and the shares were selling at $10. And really, all you care 30, 45 years from now is how many shares you're going to own. And you're going to accumulate more shares in a market downturn. And this is why, you know, staying invested in stocks, especially when you're at an early age in your 20s and 30s, really plays out, because the stock market is a great wealth creation machine.
All right. So given the fact that we do expect another recession and bear market coming up just ahead, investors are looking for advice. What would you advise them?
You know, I think a lot depends, as we've discussed here, on the size of assets and how close you are to retirement. But it's definitely time to start getting defensive and think of protecting capital, which is what we've been doing, for example, our clients since last fall. Now, we've moved into short-term bonds, normally in the 1 to 2 year maturity range, because as an economy begins to slow down and as you head into a recession, what happens is there's a greater risk, especially if you're investing in bonds. So what happens is investors begin to demand a higher interest rate, especially on corporate bonds, to compensate for the risk of a company going into an economic downturn. Obviously, when you're in a recession, sales drop off for a company, profits are cut back, and there's a greater risk there. So we expect that we're going to see rising interest rates. We saw that happen last year as the economy began to weaken, as we saw credit spreads. And this is something we watch rather closely between, let's say, sovereign debt like treasuries, which on the day we're doing this interview, a 10-year treasury has a yield of 1.7%. And you look at junk bonds that are over 8%, corporate bonds are over 4%. So that's one thing that we're doing right now. We're beefing up our bond portfolio as a method of defense. The other thing is, even though we own stocks, our stock allocation has been reduced, and the kind of stocks we own are more defensive in nature, such as staples, telecoms, utilities, or high dividend paying stocks where the yields are high enough between the 3 and 4% range. And lastly, we're doing something that we call takeover arbitrage, which is like a short-term bond position. And we're basically buying companies that are being taken out for cash and parking that money there. And, you know, for a couple months, you sit there and you hold the stock. The stock is fairly stable because the company's getting taken out for cash, not for stock. And then, of course, when the takeover comes, you get the full value of the takeover amount that was agreed upon. But we've been in a de-risking mode since last fall. And believe it or not, the other asset, as we've talked about on our weekend show that we're looking at, is gold as a hedge against financial risk. We talked on the weekend about the percentage of defaults are increasing, that this time around in the next downturn, we could see a 14% default rate, especially on low quality bonds. Also, as a protection against financial repression and negative interest rates, an environment which, John, gold generally does rather well when the carrying cost is actually positive for gold compared to cash, where like in Europe or Japan, the carrying cost of cash is actually negative.
Okay, now what about cash in the role of a defense asset or mechanism?
You know, I'm not big on cash right now, other than something that's going to be deployed, because in this kind of environment, there's very little return on cash. I would prefer to be in short-term bonds in the 1 to 2 year range, where we can pick up yields of 3 to 4%, which is obviously much better than a 0.5% or maybe 1% on cash. And there's also the risk of bail-ins in the next financial crisis. And this is something investors really need to pay a lot of attention, because the SEC has rolled out new rules on money market funds where they can break the buck this year. And also, we saw this happen in Greece and Cyprus when the banks went under. Those that had large deposits in those banks were left not getting all their money back. And John, you've seen this in the political campaign. Taxpayers aren't going to bail out Wall Street or the banks again. This time around, depositors are going to be on the hook. There just isn't a mood in this country for any more bailouts. You can see this in, for example, the Bernie Sanders campaign, and even among some of the Republicans talking about no more bailouts. The banks and Wall Street are persona non gratis in this presidential election.
Let me pose you a different scenario here, Jim. What about individuals, say they have a lot in bonds right now, or I know one case is going to be where a lot of people are just stuck in 401k plans. What do they do in this environment as they near retirement?
You know, a lot of companies have what is called a 401k in-service rollover, and that is because a lot of 401k programs, John, there's a limitation in terms of what you can do. They're usually mutual funds. They've got a couple stock funds, a couple international funds, a couple bond funds, and maybe a money market fund. That's pretty much it. And you have to choose between those. If you want to get more specific, a lot of companies are offering individuals who are close to retirement something called an in-service 401k rollover. And that is, let's say, you know, you're working for a company, been there 20 years or so, you've got, I don't know, let's say $500,000 in your 401k program. They allow you to roll that 401k program into an IRA rollover. You still continue to contribute to your 401k program, but the bulk of your assets are rolled over into an IRA, where you have a lot more leeway and flexibility to do the kind of things that we're talking about here that are more defensive in nature versus basically being stuck with, you know, a handful of 401k options, which is usually what you see in most 401k programs. But they're basically 401k in-service rollovers. And if you're 5 years away from retirement, 3 years away from retirement, you ought to check with your personnel department if you have that option, so that you can get your assets more into a safe environment, especially if you're considering retiring anytime soon.
All right. If we put all this together just as an action item, number one, start taking your chips off the table. Number two, very important to start thinking defensively at this time. Number three, the closer you get to retirement, the more defensive you should be. And number four, you can't afford a major drawdown. So that's the goal that you're trying to avoid. Let's go to our lifetime case study, which we do every week, that illustrates the subjects we have been discussing today. Of course, what do you do in the current environment as you near retirement? The case studies are real life studies. They're actual people. We simply change the names to protect the privacy. So what does the case look like this week, Jim?
Well, we're going to call this the case of Jim and his wife, Millis. Jim is age 66. His wife, Millis, is 64. Jim was forced to retire. His wife, basically a stay-at-home mom. Now, their expenses during retirement are estimated to be roughly about $85,000. Several income sources, current income sources, are $33,000 from Jim's Social Security and $43,000 in loan payments from their two sons' real estate investments. They are fortunately debt-free. Their total net worth is roughly about $2.8 million. And their investable assets are $1.5 million. Now, here's the way their assets were broken out. They had $200,000 in a fixed annuity in an IRA. And unfortunately, they were sold a high surrender annuity. So there's still 6 years left in surrender charges. So that was basically an asset that was going to stay put. They had $1.2 million, which was invested in the IRA rollover, about $70,000 in bank accounts, roughly about 1 year's worth of living expenses. Investments in real estate, roughly about $828,000. They gave loans to sons for rental properties, and they're a partial owner of rental homes. They receive roughly about $43,000 a year income from the loan repayment from their sons, and their primary residence, roughly about $550,000. Now, Jim was with another advisor or broker, and things got a little scary for him, especially during the market downturn in 2008. Unfortunately, though, he moved a lot of his assets. He left that advisor, went to manage investments on his own, and put about 22% of his assets, at one time was actually larger, in bullion and junior miners. 30% of his assets were in cash, and then he had 12% in small mid-cap stocks, 22% in large-cap stocks, and a small percentage in bonds. Now, his background is he's an engineer by trade, and he was let go by his company last year due to the downturn in energy. Now, given his age, 66, and industry constraints, he hasn't been able to find another position and has been forced into retirement. And once again, we've seen this happen so often, John, as a result of the Great Recession, where a lot of people had plans they were thinking about, you know, I'm going to retire at this age, at this time, and then all of a sudden, the downturn comes, and look at what's happening to the energy industry. Even though the economy is not in a recession, the energy economy is in a recession. In Jim's case, he lost his job. So given his age and the constraints, when he came to us, basically he wanted professional management because emotionally he came to the realization that he did not make investment decisions very well, tended to make him more from an emotional point of view rather than, let's say, an analytical point of view. So he didn't want to manage his own assets. The investment objective, basically, as anybody starting out in retirement, was to preserve wealth and maintain purchasing power. Some of the things that we looked at is a lot of the assets are tied up in his IRA and real estate, low cash, and no taxable accounts. The trust we found was not updated, and the investment properties were held in personal names, so that created a liability and also a probate issue for him. And given where his assets were allocated, given the fact that he was now retired, it was far too aggressive and did not align with risk tolerance, especially with his wife, Millis, and their investment objectives. So what we recommended was a balanced approach where we had a large percentage in bonds, especially short-term corporate bonds, because what we wanted to do is reduce the risk and create more predictability. And we also shaved his precious metals position down to 10%. 22% was way too high for somebody that's retired. We began to make Roth conversions since not using IRA as income had several years until he had to take mandatory distributions. This would diversify his tax base of assets and lower future taxes, and he could get several hundred thousand into a Roth IRA before age 70 and a half. Because at age 66, with $1.2 million in his IRA, and actually $1.4 million when we, let's say, count the annuity, that $1.4 million could be, you know, close to $1.6, $1.8 million when he would have to begin mandatory distributions, which would put him in a high tax bracket combined with his Social Security and the $43,000 he was getting in loan repayments from his real estate. We reduced exposure to risky assets like small cap, mid cap, and emerging markets. And we basically, John, created a more conservative portfolio, corporate bonds, large cap dividend paying stocks. We updated the estate plan, including putting the assets into the trust, because the trust basically his property titling bypassed his will in his estate planning because property titling takes precedent over, let's say, a will or trust. And the other thing that we did is, as an engineer, he basically wanted to know how things were done. In other words, how money was managed. And so we have a quarterly newsletter that we put out, and then also other forms of communication, which made him feel more comfortable because, as he mentioned, he tends to make his investments more from an emotional point of view. And what we pointed out, and he was in agreement, is that in the next 12 to 18 months, we were likely to head into a recession and a bear market. And he could attest to that because he got laid off in the energy industry, which is in a recession. So getting defensive fit into basically more of where he wanted to be starting his retirement, since it came unexpectedly. He thought he would be working another 3 or 4 years, basically almost up to age 70. Well, obviously, with what's happened to the price of oil and energy, things turned out much, much different. But anyway, now more aligned with risk aversion, and also for somebody that's beginning their retirement. Well, we are out of time as usual here on the Lifetime Income Series. We hope you enjoyed today's show. We're going to be doing some extra special shows in the days ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the program. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.